based on insider testimony, shows that the military participated in this repression, and over 350 people were killed. And that was really the beginning of what we see until today, in which progressively all of the voices in the country, unfortunately, have been silenced.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Reid. We will link to your report presented at the, that you presented with the others at the UN Human Rights Council again right before that report was presented. Nicaragua pulled out of the Human Rights Council. Veteran war crimes prosecutor Reid Brody. I'll be moderating a panel at South by Southwest Festival in Austin this Saturday at 4 p.m. discussing the premiere of the HBO short documentary Armed Only with a Camera, The Life and Death of Brent Renaud, a film by Craig Renaud about his brother Brent, who was killed by a Russian sniper while reporting in Ukraine on March 13, 2022. It is executive produced by DCTV's John Alpert. For more information, you can see the South by Southwest website. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Berkey, Augusta Messiah Rhodes, Anjali Kamat, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warnoff. To see all information about activities, go to democracynow.org.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
K282BH, Philomer, on 104.3 FM.
And K220HR, Hood River, on 91.9 FM.
And streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Volunteer-powered community radio.
KBOO.
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 Are you interested in learning to report on your community? Consider joining the volunteer KBOO News Team. We train volunteers on journalism, ethics, and radio storytelling. Check it out. Come to our virtual volunteer orientation on Saturday, March 8th at 11 a.m. Find more information at kboo.fm/volunteer. That's kboo.fm/volunteer.
Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m., KBOO makes everything metal. The Metal March returns again in 2025, featuring 10 hours of live bands and DJ sets from your favorite KBOO metal hosts. March 4th and support metal on KBOO. Text KBOO to 44321 or go to kboo.fm/give to donate. And tune in to the Metal March, Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m. through Saturday, March 15th at 6 a.m. Metal takes over the airwaves for the Metal March Metal Marathon, only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland's new police accountability system moves forward with board applications now open.
Clackamas County Commissioner Melissa Fireside is indicted on theft and forgery charges.
And foreclosure could be on the horizon for Portland's Ritz-Carlton Tower.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 7th, 2025. I'm Nina Mayfair.
And I'm Sam Bowman. Portland's new police oversight system has started accepting applications for volunteers to the Community Board for Police Accountability. KBOO reporters Jasmine Moss and myself, Sam Bowman, have more on the story.
After over 2 months of Portland's new system of government, the city's equally unprecedented new police accountability system is finally moving forward.
The application is now open for the first board members for the Community Board for Police Accountability.
That was Kristen Thorpe speaking at the March meeting of the Citizen Review Committee. Thorpe is the new coordinator of the Office of Community Police Accountability, or OCPA, the administrative counterpart of the Community Board for Police Accountability. Thorpe was appointed last month, and the application for board membership was posted a week ago. Two developments that mark the latest lurch forward for a process that has been underway since voters approved Measure 26-217 in November of 2020. The Community Board represents a dramatic overhaul of Portland's current police oversight system. The 2020 charter language mandated a system that is community-led, independent, empowered to discipline police, and adequately funded. An all-volunteer group, the Police Accountability Commission, or PAC, worked on fleshing out a detailed proposal between 2021 and 2023. That wide-ranging proposal has since been significantly cut back, including limits to the board's jurisdiction, powers, transparency, and independence. But even after the former city council, police union, and city attorney had their ways with it, the new system is still unprecedented. For the first time in Portland's history, police could face discipline based on the judgment of members of the public. As the process has continued to unfold, members of the PAC have continued to advocate for community involvement in the board's development. Among them is Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch, who was a member of the PAC and testified at this month's Citizen Review Committee meeting.
Former members of the Police Accountability Commission, eight of us, signed a letter that went to the city attorney's office expressing some of the concerns we have about the way that process went, the content of the application, and kind of the general problem that the entire system is supposed to be designed to be community focused. But as far as we know, no community members worked on the application form or the invitation for people to apply. So that's very problematic that we're changing what the public wanted out of this.
Among the issues called out in the letter is the omission in the application of a controversial training requirement that forces board members to go on a police ride-along and attend the police bureau's community academy.
In the past, PAC members were also vocal about the city's addition of a nominating committee to the CBPA process. The committee was not part of the 2020 charter language or the detailed plan put together by the PAC in 2023. It was a measure added to the process by the former city council under Mayor Ted Wheeler. Since the charter language approved by voters in 2020 forbade the membership of current or former police and their families on the board, the nominating committee was explicitly presented as a way to involve police somewhere in the board's formation. Out of 10 members of the nominating committee, 3 are chosen by police themselves. 2 are members of the current Citizen Review Committee. 1 is chosen by the Office of Equity and Human Rights, and the remaining 4 are each chosen by the 3 councilors from Portland's 4 new government districts. Here is OCPA Coordinator Kristen Thorpe once again.
There is a group of 10 folks on the nominating committee. They were selected prior to my hiring to be a part of the application review process. So those folks will be scoring the applications. And then the applications that have the high scores will be going to council for their approval.
The members of the nominating committee include current CRC members Yume Delegado and Nate Holton, as well as city staffer Judith Mowry, who has been involved in organizing the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing in the past. The member chosen by the District 1 councilors is former city council candidate Timur Ender. District 2 chose former State Senator Margaret Carter, who in the mid-80s was the first black woman elected to the state legislature. District 3 chose former PAC member Angie Tomlinson. And District 4 chose Carrie Chisholm, a media strategist and founder of the Blue Oregon blog. The 3 law enforcement members of the nominating committee include Captain Derek Foxworth, appointed by the police chief, the Portland Police Association, and the Portland Police Commanding Officers Association each appointed their own presidents, Sergeant Aaron Schmautz and Lieutenant Casey Hetman, respectively.
Applications for the Community Board for Police Accountability will be accepted until 5 p.m. on Monday, April 14th. Anyone who has lived or worked in Portland for the last 12 months and is not current, former, or immediate family of law enforcement is eligible. You can find more information and apply on the city's website under Job Opportunities, where it is listed as a volunteer position. For KBOO News, I'm Jasmine Moss.
And I'm Sam Bowman.
Clackamas County Commissioner Melissa Fireside was indicted on felony theft and forgery charges this week. Now she's resigning as a county commissioner. Fireside was accused of stealing $30,000 from an 83-year-old man and forging the signature of State Representative April Dobson. Dobson gave Fireside a loan last summer when she needed support, and Fireside paid it back a month later. But in November, police contacted Dobson because they got a tip about the source of that money. According to the indictment, it came from defrauding Arthur Wayne Patron. Clackamas County Chair Craig Roberts called for Fireside's resignation, which she handed in earlier today. Fireside has pled not guilty to the charges.
Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield is suing the Trump administration over its drastic firings of federal employees. He joins a suit with 20 other states, saying that the mass firings violated federal reduction in force law. When the federal government lays off 50 or more employees, they must give 60 days' notice to state governments. That allows states to be able to respond with services and information that those workers might need. Oregon didn't get that notice, meaning the state had to scramble to support the workers who were hit by the sudden mass layoff. Rayfield said in a statement, quote, "We've heard from some of these probationary employees who've been fired, and their stories are awful. One man working for the IRS office in Portland received his fork-in-the-road letter right before he went into a life-saving cancer surgery, and then he was fired. The stress this has caused federal workers in Oregon and across America is insurmountable, all because of a political agenda. It's despicable, and we're hoping this lawsuit will bring these workers some form of justice," end quote. The lawsuit asks the court to rule that the firings were illegal, reinstate the employees, and stop it from happening in the future.
Traffic deaths on Portland streets declined by 16% in 2024 compared to the year prior. That's according to the Portland Bureau of Transportation, or PBOT's Deadly Traffic Crash Report, released this week. In total, 58 people were killed in traffic accidents last year. That's lower than 2023, but still higher than the pre-pandemic average. A majority of the deaths happened on Portland's High Crash Network, a group of streets and intersections that are known to be places where drivers often speed and have poor visibility. Nearly half of all the deaths were in District 1 in East Portland. PBOT identified some persistent trends in the report. Speeding is a top contributing factor to a lot of these deaths for pedestrians and for drivers. Pedestrians make up a lot of the deaths, rising significantly since 2020. Dark conditions are also a big factor. 8 in 10 traffic deaths happened in nighttime conditions last year. PBOT has seen results from some of the safety improvements they've made, like reducing speed limits, adding new streetlights, and changing the timing of traffic signals to force cars to slow down. The Bureau has also made progress on larger infrastructure projects on 82nd, Southwest 4th, and on Northeast Halsey. PBOT Director Millicent Williams said in a statement, quote, "When PBOT has funding to make our streets safer, we see results. We are gratified to see traffic deaths decline, but one year does not make a trend. We encourage everyone to continue to be conscientious, to drive with caution, and look out for pedestrians and people biking," end quote. The budget part is a sticking point. PBOT faces a $38 million budget gap this year, since gas taxes and parking revenues have been declining. Without some intervention, the Bureau will have to drastically reduce its maintenance, cleaning, and paving efforts.
Foreclosure could be imminent for the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in downtown Portland. Ready Capital is the lender to the real estate group that owns the hotel. The luxury hotel is underperforming, according to a recent earnings report. It opened in 2023, offering rooms starting at $500 per night, and offered 132 condominiums. The real estate group only sold 10 or 11 of those condos. So the lender says they'll prepare to close the hotel and start selling off the condos, office spaces, and hotel rooms in parts. The foreclosure isn't final yet, and the sales the lender is pitching would happen over the course of a few years. The real estate group that opened the Ritz hoped it would attract travelers interested in luxury accommodations and Portland's food scene. Some locals still mourn the loss of an iconic food cart pod that was displaced by the construction of the tower. The fate of the Ritz and its tower is related to larger trends in Portland real estate. Downtown office space is abundant, as other large towers have had difficulty finding tenants.
Democrats push back on Trump's order to dismantle the Department of Education. Red states aim to deny public education to undocumented children. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court election could be the most expensive judicial race in history. With more on the story, it's Catherine Carley with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Do we need to make the Department of Education more efficient? I believe we do. Do we need to destroy it and wreak havoc for working class families across this country? Absolutely not.
Progressive Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders says a coordinated effort is underway to privatize public schools. President Donald Trump plans to sign an executive order directing Secretary of Education Linda McMahon to begin closing the department as far as allowed by law. Staff have already been warned of deep program cuts and layoffs. Meanwhile, at least five GOP-led states want to let local school boards deny enrollment to undocumented students. Tennessee State Representative William Lamberth says lawmakers bear no responsibility for the children of those migrants.
We want to focus on legal citizens and U.S. citizens, especially when it comes to our limited dollars in the budget every single year.
The policy may violate the 1982 Supreme Court decision, which says children get a free public education regardless of immigration status. Supporters say they're eager to see if the current court would overturn that ruling. House lawmakers have voted to censure Texas Congressman Al Green for disrupting Trump's address to Congress this week. 10 Democrats voted with Republicans. Amidst more last-minute tariff pauses, the stock markets again fell sharply. Trump said he will suspend many Mexican and Canadian levies until next month. The Dow fell by 1% Thursday. The administration aims to cancel the leases for dozens of National Park Service buildings. The locations are part of a larger list of hundreds of federal properties Trump says he wants to sell. The race for a Wisconsin Supreme Court seat is on track to become one of the most expensive judicial races in history. Billionaire Elon Musk is pouring money into TV ads for the conservative candidate. Musk's Tesla company sued the state for blocking new dealerships there, a case which could end up before the court. Ben Wickler leads the state Democratic Party.
So it's now clear that the attack on American democracy and the functioning of government isn't limited to the federal level. Elon Musk wants it all.
A new study reveals state abortion bans are pushing women out of the workforce and changing where people want to live. One in five prospective parents told the survey they moved or knew someone who had due to abortion restrictions. Melissa Mahoney with the Institute for Women's Policy Research says young people are not willing to trade their health for a paycheck.
The labor markets in states that protect abortion tend to be more welcoming for women with higher wages, greater access to health insurance, also a stronger labor force participation.
Mahoney says they estimate the bans in 17 states are costing the economy more than $60 billion a year. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's a special live broadcast from the KBOO First Friday Art Walk, featuring live performances from Sweet Bean Celine, Ice Caps, and Cleanser. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 35 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a high of 60 degrees. Today in history, in 1876, Alexander Graham Bell is granted a patent for an invention he calls the telephone. The quote of the day is from Greek philosopher Aristotle, who said, quote, "Man, when perfected, is the best of animals, but when separated from law and justice, he is the worst of all."
The Trump administration's purge of federal workers included Native employees of the U.S. Forest Service. With their reactions and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Thousands of U.S. Forest Service workers were fired in recent weeks, part of the Trump administration's efforts to shrink the federal government. A federal board this week ordered the U.S. Department of Agriculture to rehire those it fired. Before this development, Grist and IPR's Izzy Ross spoke to one of those workers.
Marie Richards is a citizen of the Sault Ste. Marie tribe of Chippewa Indians. A little over a year ago, she joined the Forest Service as a tribal relations specialist in northern Michigan.
The congressional boundaries of any forest, and there's actually what the forests own and manage within it, but you'll pass right by it on your way to 115. See, I'm still doing my job and I don't even work there. That's how much I loved it.
That change was sudden. Richards got a phone call from her supervisor on a Saturday in mid-February, telling her she'd been let go.
I hung up the phone and I think I screamed, and my neighbor may or may not have heard me scream. I don't have the heart to ask him.
Richards was one of thousands of probationary workers targeted for layoffs as part of the Trump administration's efforts to cut costs and shrink the federal government.
None of us deserved this. We all work hard. We all work hard and we're dedicated because we're taking care of the land.
That land includes almost 1 million acres and two treaty territories. Tribal nations ceded that to the federal government, which has a responsibility to keep it in trust for indigenous peoples. As a liaison, Richards was part of that. As a tribal citizen, the work was also personal. She worries about what will happen to that trust responsibility as people like her are laid off.
That's a promise. That's an agreement between the federal government and tribal nations that there are things. We have treaty rights, and without the people doing the work to take care of the land, where is that? Mm-hmm. Where is that? We have to have the public trust to also have tribal trust.
Richards isn't sure what's next for her. But one thing that is certain is her desire to keep doing work with tribes and heritage.
That was Izzy Ross speaking with Marie Richards. As of Thursday, Richards had yet to be reinstated. This weekend, AMC's crime thriller Dark Winds, based on Tony Hillerman novels, begins its third season. Brian Bull has this preview.
We all have a line that runs down the middle of our heart. That line separates monsters from men.
The new episodes find Navajo Tribal Police Lieutenant Joe Leaphorn wrestling with his conscience following his actions last season. Actor Zahn McClernand.
You know, he struggles with guilt, that moral gray area he's kind of found himself in. Questions his decisions, his moral compass, and what choices, how they may have cost him. It just puts him into a lot of fear and anxiety this season.
Kiowa Gordon plays Jim Chi. He says this season finds the ex-FBI agent trying to gain acceptance back into the Navajo community and reconcile with a childhood tormentor who suspected in a boy's death.
He has a chance to confront his demon, so to speak, you know, which is like a Shorty Bowlegs. He's trying to figure out if this guy is actually a murderer to this child.
Dark Winds has already been greenlit for a fourth season. Showrunner Joe Wirth says the cast and crew are all dedicated to making the show authentic and respectful of Native culture.
Without denigrating Hillerman's accomplishments or his work at all, I have a sense that he took the Navajo story and told it through his own lens. But I think it was somewhat off-putting for indigenous people who were reading that stuff. What I really wanted to do on this TV show was reappropriate the stories back to the Navajo people.
The season 3 premiere of Dark Winds is Sunday on AMC. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Bird flu concerns continue to persist, even with U.S. health officials reiterating that the risk of transmission to humans remains low. As egg prices soar, the Trump administration just unveiled a new plan to get a handle on the situation. Experts say while the moves might help, they're not fully convinced yet it will be enough to show real progress. Mike Moen has the details in Minnesota.
More than 50 Minnesota counties have reported a bird flu outbreak. The Trump administration has released a new strategy to combat it, but experts have had a largely tepid response. Last week, Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins released a five-pronged strategy and $1 billion investment to keep avian flu in check and reduce rising egg prices. The new measures focus largely on fixing on-farm biosecurity gaps, as well as push for a new poultry vaccine. Megan Davis with Johns Hopkins University says it's encouraging, but she worries about the lack of specifics in pivoting away from current methods of handling infected birds where farmers depopulate their flocks.
Our current quarantine and stamping out policy's been in place for quite some time. There's a reason it exists. These birds get really sick, so their animal welfare issues are not going to recover.
She says the U.S. needs to think thoroughly about ways to limit further amplification of an outbreak and monitor what is and isn't working. The federal move comes at a chaotic time for avian flu response. Under the Trump administration's federal spending crackdown, several key bird flu workers were fired by the USDA, and the department is now struggling to rehire them. Davis says the U.S. lags behind other countries with collaborative teams of experts to holistically assess outbreaks. She warns a patchwork investment won't make up for huge federal workforce losses of key researchers.
I have major concerns moving forward that we will not have good eyes on this virus, and that if it would, heaven forbid, start to really develop a human-to-human transmission chain, then that's a huge step down that path towards pandemic.
In the past 30 days alone, the virus has infected more than 107 flocks nationally, affecting nearly 13 million birds, that according to the USDA. So far, 70 people have been infected, and one person has died from avian flu in the U.S. This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection. This story was produced with original reporting from Donna Tried for Sentient.
The earned time approach to people in prisons helps lower the chances someone will end up back behind bars. As Eric Tegerthoff reports, North Carolina's earned time program enables people to reduce their sentences up to 30%.
Programs that allow incarcerated people to receive reductions in their sentences help lower chances of reoffending, according to analysis. North Carolina has earned time policies that enable people to reduce their sentences by up to 30%. Sarah Anderson is with the R Street Institute, a public policy think tank. She says needs-based assessments when someone enters incarceration typically determine the programs that will help a person improve themselves and succeed outside of incarceration.
Whether it's a literacy program, other education programs, certain job programs, and then for individuals with behavioral health or substance use issues, there's a lot of treatment opportunities.
People who complete these evidence-based recidivism reduction programs can see their time in prison decreased. At least 38 states have either earned time or good time programs, or both. Good time programs reduce sentences by incentivizing good behavior. Anderson says truth in sentencing laws became popular during the war on drugs and required people to serve a certain percentage, usually 85%, of their sentence before becoming eligible for reductions. That approach waned in the 1990s, but Anderson says truth in sentencing laws saw a resurgence after the pandemic because of increases in crime, despite evidence that these laws don't improve outcomes.
These types of incentive programs actually work far better to prevent crime in the future than does just require somebody serve 85% of a sentence without any type of incentive to even participate in productive programming while they're incarcerated.
Anderson says truth in sentencing laws also went away because the cost to imprison someone can strain state budgets. The cost to incarcerate someone in North Carolina last year, for instance, was on average about $50,000 annually. Anderson says the cost means we should ensure people don't go back to prison.
It's sort of incumbent on us to make sure that if we're incarcerating people and they are in state custody, that we're doing everything we can to make sure that the time that they're spending in there is the only time that they're going to be spending in there, right?
For North Carolina News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
For Arctic scientists, climate change is impossible to ignore. Researchers at a remote station in Canada's Northwest Territories have contended with wildfire and melting permafrost. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. For scientists at the Scotty Creek Research Station in Canada's Northwest Territories, climate change is not just a research topic. It's a threat they've experienced firsthand. In the fall of 2022, a late-season wildfire tore through the remote research station, destroying buildings and equipment.
It was pretty devastating. It was a huge setback. It's consumed the past 2 years of my life just planning, rebuilding.
That's Mason Domenico of Wilfrid Laurier University, who works at Scotty Creek. He says 10 years before the fire, the station had to relocate for another climate-related reason, melting permafrost, which is the subject of his own research. The Scotty Creek watershed is an area historically dominated by forested plateaus that rise from low-lying wetlands on frozen ground called permafrost. But temperatures there are rising faster than the global average, and the permafrost is thawing, which causes the plateaus to shrink and collapse.
I've been there for 6 years, and every year you kind of see the landscape change, and oh, this is thawing deeper. Oh, this plateau is completely gone now.
So for Domenico and others stationed at Scotty Creek, the signs of climate change are impossible to ignore. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
This Sunday, most Americans will be reminded to spring forward or set their clocks ahead by 1 hour. While many enjoy the extra evening sunlight, daylight savings time can disrupt sleep patterns, affecting both the health and economy. Danielle Smith reports from Pennsylvania.
This Sunday, most of the United States will spring forward for daylight savings time, which means losing an hour of sleep. Dr. Deepa Berman at the University of Pittsburgh says the time change disrupts the body's internal, social, and natural clocks and can lead to irritability and mood issues. She says research also links the shift to workplace impacts and economic effects.
Studies have shown that in the United States, we actually lose anywhere from $400 to $600 million a year because of not only loss of workplace productivity because people are more tired at their workplace, but also increased calls of absenteeism.
Berman